It's the Friday edition of the Large Morning Show in the afternoon on the Big 550 KTRS. I am Paul Harris. Ian and Dan are here with me. Thanks for following us on Twitter at 550 KTRS. You can also follow me at Paul Harris Show. Jeff Smith used to be a Missouri state senator, and at one point in his career tried to run for Congress of the United States. And that's when things went really bad, not just because he lost to Russ Carnahan in 2004, but because of things that took place during that campaign that ended up with him being convicted of a campaign finance law violation and going to spend 10 months in a federal prison in a really, really bad part of Kentucky, which I know may be redundant. Jeff is now a professor at the New School in New York, and he's running a prison entrepreneurship program, and he's still involved here in St. Louis in all sorts of operations, and has written about his experiences in prison in a book called Mr. Smith Goes to Prison. Jeff, welcome back to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me, Paul. I appreciate it.
It's nice to talk to you again. After you got out, you came on the show, and we actually spent an hour talking about some of your experiences. And looking through here, I see a couple of the stories that I remembered talking to you about a few years ago. But let's start with the very most important thing I can think of for a guy who's 5'6 and 120 pounds who goes to prison. Did you befriend the biggest guys in the prison on day one?
It's funny because the prison itself facilitated those friendships for me inadvertently. One guy who was like the captain at the prison, he kind of had an issue with me. And a week in, they put me at the food warehouse loading dock. So my job was to unload about 35 to 40,000 pounds of food every day to feed a few thousand prisoners and guards on the compound. And as part of that job, the six other guys in that job were like 230, 250, 260, 280, 305, and 350.
Wow.
So I kind of threw without even any maneuvering of my own, those are the guys that I spent all day with every day for most of my bid and became my friends and allies. And actually one of them saved me from one of the hairier situations that I encountered.
All right, go ahead. I want to hear that story.
Well, there was a guy named Big C who was, just kind of a big old Kentucky redneck, and he kind of took a shine to me. He had had a boyfriend on the compound for a while, and that guy had left, maybe gone home or been transferred to another prison. And so he started coming to every one of my basketball games that I played in and cheering me on very ostentatiously in the crowd and coming to my softball games and cheering me on and then starting to find me on the prison yard. And then one day he came to me at lunch after I'd played in a basketball game the night before and was telling me, "Senator, man, I love the way you play out there. You're the quickest guy out there. I just love watching you play." And then one of the guys who I worked with at the warehouse told him in no uncertain terms that I was not interested and he better get away from the table immediately.
Uh-huh.
And he did. And then he didn't bother me again after that. So,
good move befriending those big guys. And thank you to the prison warden for the job, right?
Yeah, he didn't know it at the time. He thought he was messing with me because everyone else weighed two or three times what I weighed. And the food was came in 80-pound boxes or 100-pound bags of rice and flour and sugar. But even though it was very difficult work, I'm so thankful that I ended up there.
You mentioned bad. Coach teams, but when you went off to prison and you're playing against guys who are double your weight, what's that like to be on the court?
Well, have you ever played, Paul?
Yes, but I'm a large person, Jeff.
Right. I mean, so prison basketball is exactly like playing tackle football, I mean, that's the only way I can explain it. So, yeah, I put on about 30 pounds of muscle while I was locked up.
Yeah.
I had to be able to play basketball in that way.
Yeah.
Not allowed to call fouls.
I was just going to ask, never call a foul on anybody in the prison.
I was going to say, basketball is kind of a contact sport anyway, because a lot of people don't realize the elbows flying and everything else. But I can imagine in prison, it's more of a contact sport.
It definitely is. But anyone who even suggests that he or she was fouled, that he was fouled on the way to the basket, is A, they're probably not going to get the call, you know, because everyone else is just going to ignore him or make fun of him.
Yep.
But B, it can actually be, you know, it can get you kicked out of a game or, you know, I mean, I don't even know if I saw it more than one or two times. Somebody even tried to call a foul and was just mocked for doing so. So it's just part of the culture is the game is rough. And if you can't take it, then you shouldn't play.
Yeah. Now that goes to another point I want to bring up here, which is, and I've talked to other people who have done time in the Huskow, in the Gray Bar Hotel, in the Slammer, and they've all told me you got to know who to go along with, even if you don't want to go along with them. And I'm not talking about it in a sexual way. I'm talking about a go along to get along kind of way. But you write in the book that you were caught between these prisoners who at one point wanted you to do something illegal, including smuggling on, and the corrections officers who, of course, don't want any of that. And how do you walk that thin line?
Well, the difficulty that I encountered was about a week into my work at the warehouse, another inmate came to me and said that the prisoners I worked with on the warehouse crew were getting ready to plant raw meat in my freezer jacket and kind of frame me. Getting caught with raw meat is worse than stealing anything else because of the threat of E. coli that could, you know, kill many people on the prison yard.
Yep.
It's considered one of the most serious violations of prison rules, stealing raw meat. And so, basically, I had a choice. Trying to frame, he told me, look, they're getting ready to frame you. You need to start stealing because they're all stealing. And they think that since you're not, you're going to rat them out for stealing.
Mm.
And so they're going to plant this raw meat in your freezer jacket. So you better start stealing ASAP. So I had to try to figure out if that guy was, like, actually my friend or if he was just trying to get me to start stealing so then framed for that. I decided that I weighed the pros and cons. I realized that getting caught with raw meat would get me thrown in isolation and probably into a high security prison. And so I decided to start stealing, like fruit and those sorts of things. I wouldn't sell them back on the yard like the other members of the crew did, but I did use them to kind of build strategic alliances.
Strategic alliances. All right, but let's get to the other part of that equation, which is the corrections officers. What was your view of them before you went in? What was it while you were in there? And what is it now?
You know, before I went in, I just viewed them the same way I viewed cops. No better, no worse. When I was in there, I learned only two teams. Prison is very racially segregated. You know, you have the blacks, the whites, and the Mexicans. But there's really only two teams. There's the prisoners, and there's the COs. And you cannot be seen, like, having a cordial conversation with the COs, because then you're going to be assumed to be a snitch. And the only thing lower than a snitch in prison is a pedophile. And so you don't want to be seen, you know, in making friends with them. So that's not a hard thing because you don't really want to be friends with them because some of them are kind of sadistic. They come in sometimes and sweep through all the cells, throwing everybody's belongings out, some in the trash, some just strewn across the floor. They suspected I was working on a book since I was taking notes. On napkins or little note pieces of notepaper, and so I got my cell tossed, you know, several times.
Wait a second, that's against the rules to write things down?
No, it's not against the rules. But what you're not quite maybe grasping is like once the gate slam, there really is no rules except whatever they want there to be at that point.
Yeah,
there's a sort of lawlessness that prevails, and sometimes you wake up and the guy next to you who'd been in the cell next to you, you just never see him again. He just disappeared, and he's in the SHU. He's in special housing unit, solitary confinement. You don't know why. Nobody can say why, but you never see him again. I didn't see guards, you know, randomly beating up prisoners, but I definitely saw a lot of, you know, cruel and inhuman behavior.
Talking with Jeff Smith, his book is called Mr. Smith Goes to Prison, What My Year Behind Bars Taught Me About America's Prison Crisis. When you call it a prison crisis, you probably have very different views about prison reform than you did before you went in. But you also used to be a politician, and you know that not much gets done in this department because no politician wants to be seen as soft on crime, right?
I think that's generally true. I don't think anybody's ever lost an election for being too tough on crime or too tough on prisoners. But, you know, when I was in politics, I'm not one of those guys like Bernie Kerik, you know, that's like, oh, I used to be like the toughest, baddest dude and, you know, really hard on criminals, and now I went to prison and I've seen the light. Because I was actually, I think, pretty progressive on those issues while I was in the Senate. I worked on criminal justice reform issues. I authored and ended up passing a bill that changed a lot of felonies for men who were struggling to pay child support, changing them from felonies to misdemeanors, because I thought we were just locking up way too many people for nonviolent offenses and crippling their ability to get jobs, which would facilitate their ability to actually pay child support. So I worked on some of these issues, and I had a little, like, some modicum of familiarity, but I definitely, my views were reinforced, and I became much more, you know, even more dramatically in favor of major prison reforms after spending most of 2010 there.
Yeah. You know, we call them corrections officers because they're part of the correctional facility, which means that they're supposed to help correct something that was wrong. I'm curious if you saw any effort while you were in prison to help guys do better once they get out.
So I'll give you that answer with a couple examples. Number one, the entire time I was there, there was one GED course, and then there was one, like, two-week course in hydroponics, which is how to grow tomatoes in water.
Uh-huh.
So I didn't see a lot of effort put into actually rehabilitating prisoners or teaching them some skill they would need to succeed. The prison had a mandatory, like, computer skills class that everyone leaving had to take. What that consisted of was a dozen or so prisoners getting sent to a room and sat in front of computer terminals. They showed us how to turn the computer on, then they told us to sit still and shut up, and then 40 minutes later, they told us to turn the computer off.
Wow, that's quite a class.
Quite a class, yeah. So, you know, those were, the, you know, and the nutrition class upon that you take when you're leaving was similar. They just showed you like a Bojangles, a Burger King, and a McDonald's menu with the caloric counts, and told you, you know, take a look at this and try to eat nutritiously when you get out. That lasted about 10 minutes. So there was no discernible interest or effort at rehabilitation, but there was a lot of what I would call, you know, sort of dehumanization, which is just CEOs constantly mocking and shouting it at prisoners, saying things to prisoners who were leaving, like, hey, we'll see you in 6 months, you jackass. It's guys like you that make sure that I'll always have a job.
Well, that's what I want to ask you. Do you think the system is set up to discourage recidivism, to discourage these guys from going out into the world and stop creating problems, or do you think it's set up to encourage them to come back in there and keep the prison system in this country going? And in fact, in many places, we now have private prisons, you know, putting people in jail for profit.
And sometimes private prisons where the companies have signed contracts with the county or with the state, ensuring that like 90 or 95% of all beds are filled. So the county or the state is actually like obligated to make sure there's X number of prisoners, and that's probably pretty terrible public policy to allow that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I write in the book that a lot of people say the prison system is broken because 2 out of 3 people reoffend. I would argue that it may be a very well-oiled machine, ensuring that a lot of people continue having jobs and a lot of vendors continue profiting.
At a huge cost to taxpayers.
A massive cost to taxpayers. It costs, you know, about $31,000 bucks a year to lock someone up on average. With 2 out, you know, and you know, they say, in talking about recidivism, you know, if you think about all the obstacles, 9 out of every 10 employers perform background checks. 4 out of every 5 landlords perform background checks. And so, just being able to like find a job, you know, since a majority of those employers will not hire someone who has a criminal background, and a majority of landlords will not rent to someone. You know, how do you even basics of like getting a decent job and a place to live when you have no skills, you have no references, you have no way to even learn how to point and click if you've been locked up for more than 15 years, which a lot of these guys had. You don't even know how to use the internet to find a job.
And so
with
Jeff,
all these obstacles in place,
yeah,
the recidivism rate doesn't surprise me at all.
And so did you know inmates who wanted to stay in prison because they would be worse off outside?
I did. And they don't say that. No one says that. But I did see a guy named Roscoe, who I think I mentioned in the book, who he, like, taunted COs and, like, got into it with a CO maybe a week before he was about to leave. He'd been locked up so long that I think he was just overwhelmed by the notion of trying to make it on his own on the outside. There's a scene in Shawshank Redemption, I think, that kind of resembles this psychology, but it's very sad that a lot of people are overwhelmed by the choices that they'd have in society and the responsibilities that they would have to try to make a living when they know that their odds are against them, and so some find it more comfortable to stay where they are. And this guy who taunted the guards about a week out and got himself thrown back in the shoe, it looked almost as if he didn't want to go home.
Yeah, you're talking about Brooks, the character played by James Whitmore in the movie. I wasn't going to ask you a Shawshank question, but since you brought it up, did you run into a lot of guys like Red, the character played by Morgan Freeman, who can get whatever you want anytime you want it?
Yeah. My celly, his nickname was Red because he had freckles, you know, black guy with freckles who kind of resembled Morgan Freeman. And, yeah, this guy named Dredd, because he had dreadlocks, he could get pretty much anything he wanted. And, frankly, those of us in the warehouse could get a lot of things because we worked off the compound, you know. So we actually dealt with people in the outside world. And so there were guys who I worked with who had the ability to get their hands on a lot of stuff.
Wow. One last thing I've got to ask you about before you go. I mentioned at the top of this interview that you are now running a prison entrepreneurship program. Does that mean you want to teach guys in prison to be entrepreneurs, or you ran into guys in prison who already are entrepreneurs, just black market guys?
Well, first of all, to clarify, I'm not running the program, but I'm on the board of the nonprofit that runs the program. It's called the Prison Entrepreneurship Program, and it's amazing. It operates out of two prisons, state prisons in Texas. They teach about an 8-month-long Baylor University certified MBA level curriculum to current prisoners. And the program culminates in a Shark Tank like competition where prisoners get in front of hundreds of executives from all over the world and they pitch their business idea after they've written a full length business plan over the course of those 8 months. It's an amazing program. The recidivism rate for graduates over the past decade since the program's inception is just 6%. So it's just less than 1/10 of the national recidivism rate. Mm. And also it's already produced several multi-million-dollar a year revenue producing businesses. So yeah, the reason I got involved with this is because I saw such incredible entrepreneurial talent inside the prison. These guys had all run successful drug businesses, and there's not a single business concept that you'd learn at Wharton or Harvard Business School that you couldn't learn in prison.
Well, Jeff, it's a pleasure talking to you because you have such great stories to share and because you're a teacher yourself and you understand the value of ideas and passing them along. But this is the only interview I've ever done that has referenced both Shawshank and Shark Tank.
Yeah.
The book is called Mr. Smith Goes to Prison, What My Year Behind Bars Taught Me About America's Prison Crisis. It's available now. And this is the author right here, Jeff Smith. A pleasure talking to you again.
Paul, before I leave you, I'll just leave you with one last thing.
Okay.
One thing I did not do in prison was to get in the poker game. You know why?
Well, I have an idea why.
Because I didn't want to lose money. But I definitely didn't want to win because that can be really dangerous.
Jeff and I used to play poker together on occasion. That's why he brings it up. Great to talk to you, my friend. Appreciate your time today.
Thanks for having me on. See you guys.
This is the Big 550 KTRS.